Jimmy Joe, you done bad. Y'all know what settles on bad ones, don't you?
Pumpkinhead.
Pumpkinhead.
Y'all stop. There ain't no Pumpkinhead.
What about old Mr. Foley?
He moved away.
Pumpkinhead got
it. Teared off his head and drank all the blood.
Did not.
Did too.
Shut up, Hessie.
Keep away from Pumpkinhead unless you're tired of living.
His enemies are mostly dead. He's mean and unforgiving.
Stop.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop. And of course, with me today, as always, is Trish Coughlin.
Hello.
And Sam Stepanenko.
Hello. Me too.
I was really tempted to call you one of you pumpkin-headed, but it doesn't really apply to either one of you.
I've got like the smallest fucking head in the world.
Well, people make pumpkins out of, use those at Halloween too.
I have reddish orangey hair, so I'm probably the closest pumpkin head.
And I'm that's more like true. The shrunken pumpkin head after Halloween, you know, that's kind of shriveled up.
That's dried. It's been there for 3 months.
And my face kind of looks like that sometimes too, where it's all like sort of twisted and distorted and mushed in.
See, they look scarier to me then because there's like a grimace to them.
Yeah, me too. I have to agree that they actually do tend to look a little more terrifying once they're starting to wilt and shrivel up.
Right? I think everybody should buy their pumpkins a little early, get them carved, and then just let them sit and rot for it. They'll be perfect for Halloween.
Get them at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And put them out at Halloween.
Oh, well, that works for us because our Thanksgiving. Oh, yeah. But doesn't work for our American audience.
And it
or
also
for audiences that don't have Thanksgiving.
Okay, so Canadian Thanksgiving, get your pumpkins.
Yeah. Pumpkins for
Halloween.
Halloween.
2 weeks early. Before.
That's the rule.
And in case you haven't guessed, that's your hint. Jay, what are we doing this week?
I have no idea.
No, really?
Oh, is it? Well, I watched the Christina Ricci movie.
If they're listening, they've already seen it in the headlines. We're doing Pumpkinhead.
Yes. Of course, yes. We know that everybody knows, but we still say so every episode.
Yeah. Follow through. Because people can read. We know you can read. We assume you can read.
We hope.
I hope so.
The title's Parlor, isn't it? You're actually listening to this podcast is just because you're interested in to hear what we do with it.
That's right. It is up for a remake. And it was actually supposed to go in production this year, but nobody's been cast. And I haven't even seen writers attached to this thing. So we're going to go ahead and give them some hints.
As what happens is they're stuck in development purgatory.
Yeah. So it is something that they are planning to do.
Maybe.
But we'll do it first.
Maybe they're waiting for us to do it.
Maybe. Maybe they just want to hear from us. Now, Pumpkinhead originally debuted in 1988 and was problematic out of the gate because Dino De Laurentiis was producing this and their company was going bankrupt and Pumpkinhead kind of fell into that bankruptcy void until it was picked up by United Artists. Mm-hmm. Which later merged with MGM. The version I watched had MGM at the front.
Me too.
Me too.
Yeah. So they got a limited release and it made its budget back, but it didn't make a lot of money and it became one of these, I'm going to say quiet cult classics because people watch cult movies, but I think it's one of the better horror movies that you've never seen.
Yes.
I have to agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I still remember seeing the VHS cover for this one in the video store.
Oh, God, I hope I still have that buried somewhere because I have had it on VHS.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a great sleeve.
It was a great sleeve. And that's, I remember that's why I watched it, because I was working in the video stores at that time. And I remember going, okay, this looks like fun.
That's probably when I, well, we were doing that at the same time.
Around the same time, yeah. Yeah.
It's probably when I watched it first time too.
And that's an old thing that I totally miss, is going to the video store and just feeling the attraction to the sleeve of the thing.
Right.
that's how you make your choices.
Especially in the late 80s when they were doing those fun covers, like the 3D covers and the lenticular covers and anything they could to draw you in.
Beautifully painted cover.
That too,
and
yes.
That's what I really liked about that. I love like painted poster work and painted cover art, but sometimes that's all you get is something really flashy, and then you get...
Oh, yeah. I watched a lot of shitty movies because of great covers.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. No, and I think even that one, I was like, oh, okay. It's got Lance Henriksen. That could be good.
Yeah.
And I don't know, because usually the effects don't mesh with the painted artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, oh, but wait. It's directed by Stan Winston.
Yes.
That, I'm sure his effects company is doing this. That could be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And his directorial debut, was it not?
For a feature. Yeah. I think he directed some stuff prior to this, but this was his feature debut. And he didn't. Yeah. His directorial credits are pretty small to begin with. He was probably one of the finest effects artists in the business at the time. And when he passed, that was a great loss to the business. And nobody did practical effects as good as he did.
The effects were amazing. You could tell they had budget limitations.
Sure.
A lot of hiding of things.
Oh, sure.
But when you got to see Pumpkinhead, it was pretty freaking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, Stan Winston had very little to do with it, because he's so occupied in actually getting the production going of this film, all the background work that directors would wind up doing that most people don't see, and casting and all that stuff. He had very little time to actually oversee the construction of Pumpkinhead. And I got to say, his guys did a great job on that. Yeah. I mean, it's still... For an era, 1988, that didn't have CG and it was all practical and animatronics. Looks good.
Well, I think...
Still holds up pretty good.
It still
considering,
holds up very well.
Yeah. Considering, and I mean, considering who he was, he would know exactly who he'd want to work on it, because he know who would do what he required. So that's the thing. Like, he could just hire somebody and know exactly what they could give him.
And anybody he hires is going to go, I have to do a good job, because this is fucking Stan Winston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. One of his boys, Tom Woodruff Jr., was Pumpkinhead. And you got to give it to his performance as well, because he's in this big stilt suit, and the way he moves with the arms. And there are certain scenes, like when he pushes that chick's head through the window and then just glides his hand back. There's movements of the character, and then the animatronics that give him this wry smile, and at times where he's enjoying the carnage.
They did a great job of giving Pumpkinhead personality, considering
sure
he has
did.
No dialogue.
Yeah,
right.
He's got a lot of personality. He plays with his victims. He definitely goes out of his way to torment them. But I mean, everything about Pumpkinhead is ritualistic as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the point of him.
He's creating terror.
Because Pumpkinhead's about punishment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Well,
he's a creature of vengeance.
Punishment in the same sense, right?
Yeah.
So he is, because he is a creature of vengeance, is, I think you were trying to say there before I cut you off.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. He's totally a creature of vengeance. He was Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
But cooler.
Cooler. Oh, yeah. Much cooler.
Well, at least in the movies.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'll watch Pumpkinhead again and again and again.
Yeah.
Ghost Rider?
No.
No, no.
And I like there's shades of Alien in their performance as well, which is that very balletic sort of the creatures very much. It can be very elegant, so it's just playing with people, like a cat.
You can tell there's a certain homage to it in the body shape, and the thinness of Pumpkinhead is it is very reminiscent of Alien in that sense too. So, and I'm sure that was an homage, especially given the fact that Lance Henriksen was in Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, given the thinness of that body and the sinuity of it, I would think in modern effects, I mean, this creature, if it exists in the real world, would probably be able to move like a cat. Like, it'd probably be really fast. This thing's slow and stalkery. But that's what they did in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bunch of kids coming into town for a camping trip and getting killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's certain tropes in the movie that are very typical 80s.
And they're the weakest parts of that film.
Yes.
I think there's also something really menacing about something that doesn't need to be fast. It can take its time.
Mm-hmm.
It knows that it'll just get you.
because they're marked. It will find them eventually.
Yeah, I guess you're not in a hurry if you can find them wherever.
It's very It Follows in that respect.
Yeah, there's no shaking this thing. And that could be a cue to maybe what we might do in a remake. I don't know. I'm sure we all have separate thoughts. We don't talk about these things prior, so we'll see how this all meshes.
I'll be honest. I don't have an awful lot because it's such a good film. There's some minor changes I would make, but yeah, after watching it, again, for the first time since 1989, I haven't seen it in over 20 years. It was a very, very interesting to see it with new fresh eyes, I guess is the best way. And yeah, there wasn't very much I would change, and I'm sort of saving what thoughts I do have for the podcast, obviously.
But. Oh,
yeah. No, and we'll save some of that stuff down the road. But for me, my changes are more in character.
Yes,
And the surroundings. Everything about Pumpkinhead works just fine.
Yeah.
I mean, modern effects can make him a little more thrilling, but I wouldn't change the designs or... Nope. There are aspects in the movie that I thought were really good that sometimes didn't get enough time.
Yeah, the overarching themes in this movie are very good.
Yeah, and there's some movies that got too much time. And that was my other.
This movie's pretty tight. I mean, it's 86 minutes. It is a tight movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are things that I think probably needed less time, and some stuff needed more time. And I think most of them were character pieces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, man, I didn't give two shits about most of those kids.
Oh, no, I totally agree. They really fed you the tropes, right? You've got the bad kid, right? The one who's going to cause all the trouble. You've got his naive, supportive younger brother who's really a good kid. Mm-hmm. And then you've got like the nerdy people who don't really belong with the group. And then you've got the two girlfriends.
But none of those aspects get really pushed. I mean, they're just shoved in your face. You don't get a sense of their personalities or anything.
And it comes to a point where I think what they had in mind was the bad kid was supposed to finally realize that his actions had sort of consequences and he was kind of trying to be a better person. And I never got that impression. Like, I was just so happy when he died.
Well, no, there was a point there where it wasn't very well handled, but there was a point there
where
you're saying, I'm going to go turn myself in. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's just too little too late thing. And that's fine. The too little too late is definitely something that works. It's just it didn't work well in this particular movie.
No.
And I hate to say this. I love Lance Henriksen, but this has got to be one of the weakest performances I've ever seen by him.
I've got an interview that I'll run near the end of this, and he talks a little bit about the script and being really resistant to reading it initially.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very young Lance Henriksen. This is, I think, the next movie after Near Dark.
Yeah, and and I was comparing this performance to that performance specifically and to his performance in Aliens, which was sort of 3 or 4 years before that.
Yeah. I think he's pretty good in this. It's just we don't get
I didn't say
it
wasn't good. I said this is his weakest performance I can recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he's a great actor, a weak performance is still pretty good. Yeah.
I think that's where the movie fails in some regards is I don't think we get enough of Lance and his torment about losing his child in this accident, this emotional turmoil he's going through. It just happened so fast that I think we need to linger on that emotion a little bit and let the audience feel it too.
I think that's a good point because unless of him driving around with the body in the car, in the truck.
And right.
It's like it went from being kind of tragic to kind of creepy.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And not in a good way creepy. Not in a good horror movie creepy way. It was
mental illness creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was supposed to establish how broken he was, but I think there's a better way that could be done.
And there's a moment too where the kid, like he has a hallucination where the kid goes up, "What have you done, Daddy?" And then nothing done with it really. That's just
no,
the one
and
thing.
It's a good moment.
It was a great moment,
a very memorable moment.
You
in the
could
film.
Do so much with that idea.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, I just felt that was so wasted and it could have been.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that and more, but I'm going to run the trailer and let everybody else get caught up to this conversation. We'll be right back.
Afraid raising the dead ain't within my power. Will it be all right? Should I be afraid?
It's coming! looking for an old woman. She lives somewhere in the mountains hereabouts.
All she can do is take you straight to hell. You go home and you bury your boy.
Some folks say is how she's got powers.
Who are you?
Ed Harley.
What do you want, Ed Harley? Say it. You're looking for vengeance. Vengeance. Say it. There's no graveyard way back deep in them woods. The thing you're looking for is in there.
It was an accident.
Right, Pumpkinhead, 1988. Now, Pumpkinhead, as I said before, was directed by Stan Winston, with a, based on a poem by Ed Justin. Mm-hmm. And the if anybody listened to the beginning of this podcast, you probably heard some of that poem as the kids are taunting one of their younger brothers. The story, of course, was conceived by Stan Winston, Richard Wynum. Richard Wynum did Hunter's Moon in 99. And the screenplay was polished off by Mark Patrick and Gary Girani, as well as Stan Winston. Gary Girani did the 96 Vampirella movie, and Mark Patrick Carducci wrote Buried Alive in 1990. Movie had a budget of $3.5 million and had a U.S. gross of about $4.4 million.
So not at the box office, but definitely through the years, it's got to have made its money.
I think through rentals and things like that. I think it probably did okay. I mean, it did get a direct-to-video sequel years later in the 90s, and then two more TV movies on the Sci-Fi Channel after that. I've seen the second and third ones. I haven't seen that last one. So.
Huh. Have to take a look for that.
Yeah. I don't know. They sat on it, and boy, I remember the direct-to-video sequel being just god-awful.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's what direct-to-video sequels generally are.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, when your entire creative team is not involved.
There's lots of good direct-to-video horror.
There was. Yeah. Right? But there's a difference between a direct-to-video sequel and direct-to-video that was intended to be direct-to-video.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Like Full Moon did it so well.
Yeah, uh-huh. They created a universe of stuff.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Right? And that's because that's what they did.
Well, it's the difference between wanting to do something and just a shameless cash grab. That's where you, because shameless cash grab, they'll just do it as cheaply and as quickly as possible just to get money out of it.
And a lot of that was, for sure. And sometimes you got some gems out of that, but more often than not, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. So and I don't know why, but I for some reason I thought this movie was somehow associated with Full Moon, and I don't know why. I know it's not, but in the back of my mind, it made me feel like a Full Moon production.
Maybe the title?
And rewatching it, it's leaps and bounds above Full Moon.
Yeah, no, I don't see it.
And like I said, it was just sort of, I don't know where I got that.
Although Full Moon had, again, great video sleeves and posters, so
that could be it. May
have been part of it. And I mean, this movie predates Full Moon anyhow, right? Full Moon didn't sort of pop up until the early 90s.
Yeah, but well, their movies franchises, some of their more successful ones were already pre the Full Moon label. Yeah. Like Puppet Master had already existed, and so did Trancers. Yeah. But they were already doing it. Charles Band was already out there doing it before he founded the company.
So yeah, you'll see hints of that in that work, but it just doesn't have the name on it.
Yeah.
No, as Sam said, I think it doesn't bear a lot of resemblance, and it's a much neater script and a much tighter script.
It's a much deeper script.
Yeah.
And don't forget, I mean, it's been 27, 28 years since I saw it, so my memories of it were not strong.
Yeah.
We were children then.
Yes, and I wasn't adult enough to appreciate the depth of this story then, and I mean, I wasn't a kid anymore, but I certainly wasn't mature enough to really appreciate what this story was telling.
We've seen quite a few movies where vengeance out of tragedy drives the film. I mean, certainly The Crow comes to mind first and foremost.
Yeah, but this movie isn't just about vengeance, it's about the cost of vengeance.
Yes.
It is. Right? And that's where I think the movie needs to slow down on.
Yeah.
Because you've got these kids, these teenagers, 20-something college-level kids, that are coming into town for a vacation in a cabin. We don't know who it belongs to or whatever. No. They're just coming in and stop at this grocer and are fooling around on their bikes. And the son of the grocer's grocery, who is Lance Henriksen, his son is accidentally run over by one of those guys. I think the, what was I had trouble.
Steve.
It wasn't Steve. It was Joel.
It was Joel.
Joel. Yeah. See?
See, that's the thing. They're so interchangeable.
Yeah, none of the, you barely get introduced to them.
I wrote down my actors and looked up their names later because I couldn't remember who was who.
Yeah.
That's how bad that is.
As they were dying and shouting each other's names, that's how I was getting their names.
I almost didn't cast any of them. I was that close to not casting any of them.
I didn't. Yeah. I didn't because that's such a generic 80s thing, and I think I'm over it. Like, we saw that it's in every slasher movie, kind of over it. So go back to the drawing board there. I still think the basic model works.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and I mean, my casting reflects a certain change in the dynamic. I mean, you need your victims.
Right? Oh, yeah. You need victims.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just think you can do that a little slicker. Yeah. Making this a little bit more of a robust town might solve some of that problem.
True.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't get to the cast. Lance Henriksen as the lead, Ed Harley. Jeff East was Chris. Who was Chris? Who cares?
He was the blonde guy.
He was the goofy looking curly haired one. He was the nice guy.
Sure, I'm going to say that about all of them.
Yeah, we'll name them by their tropes.
Yeah, okay.
You tell the names and we'll try to remember.
Okay, Jeff East was Chris.
He was the preppy guy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Second last person to die. Or last person to die.
John Aquina was Joel.
He was Joel. He was the big older brother actually killed
Hardy's
kid. Entitled rich asshole. 80s.
With a troubled past.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Kimberly Ross. Kim, who played the cleverly named Kim.
Final girl.
No.
Wasn't she?
She was Joel's girlfriend.
Abused girlfriend.
She was the over-sexualized abused girlfriend.
Yes.
Yes. Joel Hoffman, who was Steve, younger brother.
Brow-beaten younger brother.
Yeah.
Good.
But still a good kid.
But still a good kid. Cynthia Bain was Tracy, final girl.
Final girl. Okay. Final girl, but also like the good one.
Yeah. She was crying through most of the movie.
The good one who was with the also heroic, but with the good guy.
Yes. Yeah. Carrie Ramsen, Maggie.
The
disposable, emotionally fragile one.
There we go. Perfect. Beautiful. I was trying to think of it. Yes.
Beautiful. we're through the kids now. Florence Schaffler was Haggis. We'll get to that. And I just wanted to mention Brian Bremmer, who was Bunt. It was way down on the credit list, but I think is a very major character in this film.
Yes.
And Dick Warlock made a small appearance, but he's attached to a lot of horror movies. And I just wanted to mention Dick Warlock in this film as Clayton Heller.
We also forgot the guy who played Wallace because he's been in another one of our remakes.
I didn't even write down Wallace, so enlighten me.
Wallace is Buck Thomas, who was a John Carpenter regular and in our They Live episode. One of the girls from this was also in our last Starfighter episode as a cheerleader.
Wow.
I think I remember.
Look at you doing your research.
Oh, wait, but there's more.
Oh, God.
If you want some geek cred, there is an early appearance by an actress who's very, very popular in geek culture right now. She's on Big Bang Theory. Mayim Bialik plays the sister who's talking to Bunt as he's climbing out the window.
Are you sure? It looks nothing like her.
I know, but it's her.
It's her?
It's her.
Oh, she's just a child.
There. Yes.
Weird.
I had a holy shit moment there, too.
Oh, my God. Okay, holy shit. Yeah, because that's... Okay, great performance, Mayim. Did not know it was you.
Yeah, I mean, she was blonde, and this was part of it, too, I think, is that she was blonde, and...
Yeah, that completely changes how she looks.
Yeah, and I mean the fact she's not wearing glasses, it's kind of hard to associate her with her. But yeah, it's her.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, to briefly round out the story of this thing, Ed, grief stricken, remembers seeing from a childhood perspective this creature called Pumpkinhead, and in this town is kind of one of those scary boogeyman bedtime stories, and has memories of actually witnessing this creature on one of its vengeance stalks. And that's how the movie actually opens in the 50s, as somebody's knocking on doors and this town won't help.
Yeah.
Because this person is marked by Pumpkinhead.
Well,
and if you get in the way of Pumpkinhead, you are now a target.
Yeah,
well.
it's helping anybody else who he does not like. But they also allude to the fact the guy's knocking on the doors going, I didn't hurt that girl. And they're like going, well, you're marked now, kind of. Whatever happens,
it can't
now.
Be stopped. Once it started, it can't be stopped.
Yeah, yeah. But it also alludes to the fact that he may have done something to somebody else, and so the parents decided to take vengeance and they called upon Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, and that's where Haggis comes in. Haggis is this old witch who lives off in the hills, and she's the one who knows how to raise Pumpkinhead, whose little plot of land is where its corpse or seed lies is this raised up plot of land in this graveyard. I think it's really cool.
It is really cool. And I keep that look because it's so amazing.
Yeah, there's some really cool visuals in that.
Like, it's like kind of like a half, it looks like it's sort of like a half tree that's sort of been hollowed out. And then, like, it's sort of like the seed that's planted in there, and that's where it's kept. Like, it weirdly looks like that.
It looked like this hill that had been eaten in like an apple.
It looked like all the ground around had been excavated in this one spot. They just left.
Yeah.
It's like they dug around it and left it there because it was,
and of course,
sacred in some weird way. Yeah.
And of course, there's pumpkins surrounding
roots
it
and all sorts of stuff.
It's weird. Was really cool, really creepy. Had a neat, almost Danny Elfman like visual to it.
It did. Yeah, that's our Tim Burton. You mean?
Tim Burton.
Yeah, Danny Elfman. Tim Burton. It's
very
Tim Burton.
Sleepy Hollow-esque.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, pre-Tim Burton, so maybe he grabs some inspiration. I mean, you never know how these films have influenced modern filmmakers in some ways, because, there's definitely a sense of that gothic foreboding that Tim Burton.
I'm making you do it.
Yeah.
Tim Burton has kind of mastered in this movie, especially at this in that graveyard scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, that was so gross, but I loved it. It was just you could tell like when he's touching the thing, it feels gross.
Yes.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, and Haggis was amazing. The performance was excellent, and the makeup was astounding. Yes. I mean, I was watching him going, they even got like this little fine details, like the hairs you can see in the firelight. And I'm like, that looks so awesome. Like, it just shows how talented these makeup artists were.
And in some ways, I think Pumpkinhead's a bit of a resume for Stan Winston's entire company.
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, this is what we can do.
Yeah, this is the budget we had, and this is what we did. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine what it would be like if you gave us money.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. So no, I liked Haggis. I mean the witch in the bog is a well used trope as well, but it was essential to this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an aspect I think I would probably keep. You know, on the outskirts of this town, and some of the older families that live on the outlying parts would know how to find her.
Yeah,
and I'd like to know a little bit more about her story, because she seems to have a curse of her own.
Yes.
I get the feeling she's a lot older.
Oh yeah, no, she's tied ancient. To Pumpkinhead in more ways than one.
Yeah,
I have a feeling they've been doing this for.
Oh
yeah,
for sure.
And there's something you could hint at in a remake as well of the longevity of this person, and I think that would be a fascinating way to go. Yeah. In fact, this whole town. Part of it should be a wee bit of tourism. You think about some of these rural towns in the U.S., and you think about Roswell, and you can't go by a window without aliens in it. And that town where the Mothman was sighted.
Yeah, that's a huge city.
It is now. Yeah, it is. But they become destinations in a way. And I would say that one's more of a township, but a large one.
Yes.
A village like this is.
Oh, God. What's the name of those people who go searching for Bigfoots and Loch Ness monsters?
Yeah, well, these are cryptids.
Thank you. Cryptozoologists.
And this is, I would think, the legend of this particular cryptid in this case, Pumpkinhead, would be part of the attraction to going to this town.
And that would feed really well into your whole idea of instead of the trope, right, have them be cryptozoologists. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and I want to make this a little larger of a town as well. Yeah. You know, these village towns, they're fading away, and they're not identifiable to an audience, but a larger town, like, it could still be 1,000 people or less,
and that functions. But it can also tie into the idea where you have, like, Bunt, who is scaring his younger sibling with pumpkin heads, gonna get you pumpkin heads, but near the end of the movie where he finally sees, he's like, I just thought it was a story. Oh, yeah. He literally thinks this. So you could have the tie-in where the children really do think it's a fake thing. So they're completely going along with this whole tourism thing. And the parents are like, we kind of know it's real. We shouldn't tell them.
Yeah.
And that's just it. It should be for the people who haven't lived or experienced this creature. The ones that have are keeping it really quiet. And the ones that haven't experienced it, and I mean, if the last outing of Pumpkinhead was in the 50s, there's an entire generation of people running around
almost
now.
Almost two.
By the 80s. I mean, if you bring it up to now.
It would be two.
Yeah, it'd be two. And they have no idea. It's grown into a legend and a myth. And it's something that is endearing to their town, but not something they really believe in.
Yeah, no. But when there's a secret history there that where it is really real. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was thinking about what you were saying about a larger urban center, not like a urban center, but a good medium-sized town.
Yeah, and I don't want a city.
Ozarks, like the Ozarks, where you have like these tourist towns in the Ozarks.
I can just see Pumpkinhead crawling through swamp.
Yeah. But yeah, then not 10 minutes away, you have these shanty towns, these small communities that barely even have power, if they have power, right? Mm-hmm. And that would be a great way to sort of have the believers, right?
Yeah,
Sort of outside the city, and they're deeply steeped in the legends and history of their region. And then you've got your touristy town, right? And I actually see Harley sort of having moved into town, right? Sort of maybe living above his shop. And it's very touristy kind of thing, right? Like, he's really catering to that crowd.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of gives you a sense of where he doesn't really believe anymore. Like, his memories are so faded, right?
Because, you could have him be very young when he saw. And his parents just said, you just had a bad dream, sweetie.
Instead of being, like, the preteen, he could be almost an infant, like 2-3, right?
Yeah.
But I also like the idea of having it so, like, he's moved in town, but the thing is, I want him to be, like, he probably still has a bit of family out there and he knows the stories. Like, that gives him the connection where he can go back there. He's not that, because I think with those little shanty towns, anybody in town is still an outsider, even if they've lived there their whole lives.
Yeah.
But if he was once one of them, he isn't so much an outsider. Yeah.
Well, and he does business with them, right? So he's kind of straddling that line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
I wanted to lessen the fact that everybody in this town seems like they're hicks.
Yeah,
hillbillies.
Yeah.
It really drove me nuts. I'm like, this is such a weird stereotype and I hate it.
Well, I think it's necessary to the story that you have some of that, but there has to be that balance between, right?
Yeah.
Something to make these rural people seem that much more rural and kind of strange. You have to have juxtaposition
and I can see them being from the old ways as this town has grown around this legend.
Yes.
Yes.
And I mean, it'll have its own industry, but I mean, tourism suddenly become a big part of what keeps this town afloat.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you have them, it's sort of like there is this foreignness and this otherness to them that would be a whole thing. Like, it gives that juxtaposition, like the people, they look at the people making profit out of this whole thing like it's kind of sacrilegious to them, because they're like, like, they're making fun of something they have no comprehension
of. Foolish too. They're like, they think it's like poking the bear,
and there's a source of mockery for the tourists and the people who are making money off the myths as well. So you have conflict inside the juxtaposition, right? And that's where you get some of that reluctance from the Wallace character, right? Whatever you want to call him, to help Harley, is because he's kind of like, well, you've stepped in with these people who are mocking us. Just because we still do business with you doesn't mean that we like you.
Oh, and it could be also that thing is like, oh, I get it. You make money and you profit out of this, but now you believe, for sure, for sure. Like, it'd be that whole thing. Like,
yeah, and he was part of the town and left.
Yeah.
And then came back to profit.
Yes. Like, he can't, they just they don't trust him, which is going to be part of the conflict.
Yeah. See, now you give me some, Jay just said something there that gave me some interesting idea for backstory, because one of the things you never really see is where his wife is, what happened to her. Mm-hmm. Right, you just see him as a single father.
Yeah.
So that could be sort of motivation. He fully left town. He went out to college and got a career, a wife and family. Then something happens to his wife, car crash, whatever. It's just sort of typical early death of a wife thing, right? Yeah. And so he comes home, right, and takes over his parents' store or whatever. And maybe he's the one who kind of started this whole tourist thing too. It's not just the fact that he left, came back, and is kind of a townie now, but he's also kind of the reason that this tourism is built up, because he's kind of promoted it, right? Because of his childhood, his very weak childhood memories or very faint childhood memories, he had this idea to draw business to town. It could make it really interesting. It might stretch it out a little bit, but it could make it...
This movie is 86 minutes. There's room.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We can expand upon it. There's some movies out there that are like well over 2 hours. We can definitely add another 25 minutes.
But I think it would give a lot
more
depth to the character and make him explain kind of why he's so tortured, because he knows what he's doing is wrong. He's lost his wife. All he has really is his son.
And you do get a feeling at the beginning when that family comes in to buy the stuff, and he's just kind of in la la land. He's kind of bored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just existing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Going through the motions, but he does love his son.
His son is the light of his life.
It's the only thing that keeps him going.
Yeah. And he keeps going with this store. Like, I think it would be the other thing. He kind of wants to stay there. He feels it's probably ironically safer for his son. Mm-hmm. So he wants to be around kind of where he grew up, because he could also somewhat romanticize his upbringing, which I'm pretty sure a lot of people do. Like, wasn't it great when we were young? And it might not be true.
Mm-hmm. And you could have a similar circumstances. You can have cryptozoologists to come into town, and maybe he's done this a few times with cryptozoologists, takes them around, shows them some of the local legends, maybe even has like what we have in Calgary and most big cities have, our ghost walks.
Yep.
So he has something to tour these guys around. But another crew comes in, they got ATVs, they're tearing around and doing their own investigations and maybe not being as careful as they should be. Yep. And it's part of his own fault that these people are coming to town.
Oh, man.
Which, I mean, you could even bring in the politics of the town, maybe with the township itself. You can show some of that conflict. Maybe the mayor's, you know, pro-tourism and, you know, the guys who live on the outskirts are not. And
can you imagine like that, not like if he's part of it where he brought these people in, the agony of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Compounded by losing his son.
Yeah. No, it really would play to making him a more sympathetic character. And I think that was one of my issues is as great as this movie is, there's not a lot of empathy or sympathy for Harley.
Yeah. And we don't really get enough time. We don't get enough time of his happiness with his son. We don't get enough time with the grief over his son or the anger.
Well, we get lots of time with the grief, but it's just not handled.
Yeah, I don't think we get it near enough. Everything moves at a really quick clip.
Like when he flips over to the fact, is like he finally realizes what's happening. That was, I was like, did I miss something? Because it happens so fast. I'm like, what?
It does happen so fast. I mean, when he pays her to raise the pumpkin head, he remembers this legend, he wants vengeance, and he brings his entire nest egg. And quick fact, you'll hear at the end of this episode Lance talking about how he creates his own character. He got his own props. He found all those silver dollars and stuff. You'll hear about that at the end of the episode. But yeah, so he's taking this nest egg to do this, to raise this thing. But he doesn't know that there's going to be a psychic link between him and the creature.
Yeah.
Nor do we. We suspect, but...
No, yeah, nor do we until that first kill, and then he's in agony as this thing, these images are flashing in his brain.
Yeah, but it still doesn't tell you the depth of the link, which is what I really, really enjoyed.
Well, it does. It's sort of, I only kind of got to understand exactly what was kind of truly happening when that dog bites him and Pumpkinhead's like, ow, my arm. And I'm like, oh, God. Oh, it's that. Like, it was really clear when that
That's what makes this movie so good, is because it doesn't spoon feed you. It gives you hints.
Oh, and I love the way that plays out. I wouldn't change a thing there. I may maybe just make those scenes a little wee bit longer. But as, you know, we can see the flashes in his brain from his perspective as well and experiencing what's going on. And and maybe, you know, those hints along the way that they're, how deep that connection starts to become as Pumpkinhead gets further and further into killing off these kids that have been marked.
Yeah.
I mean, by the end, they're starting to look like each other.
Yes.
You know, that, which
I love that
great.
Bit.
It was really great.
Yeah. Afterwards, I was thinking, I'm like, what would happen if it went further than that? Like, how far would that have gone? I would have liked to have seen a transformation in Ed a little bit more before, you know, that suicide moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he realizes the only way to stop the creature is to kill himself.
Yeah, like you could have it.
He's brought this torment into this town.
Yeah, because really all you really get is sort of the eyes changing, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Some teeth stuff too, some dentures, that sort of
thing. But. Yeah, I'd like do that, remove like his hair.
Yeah.
Take that off.
Yeah, and I mean the creature's starting to look like him as well.
Yeah.
Which is really neat.
Yeah, make the creature look more humanoid and make him look less human. Like, hunch him, give him sort of some really crazy, like, shoulders like the creature.
Yeah, I mean, you can get into the whole idea that by completing its task of vengeance, the previous soul who summoned him is being freed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. The person who summons him becomes the new Pumpkinhead, and the last one is freed to exist his life as Ed, I guess, or whoever
They were previously. Prior.
Well, no, he had Lance Henriks's face.
That's true. Yeah.
So he becomes the creature becomes Lance Henriks's character.
I don't know. I sort of think in essence that's sort of what happened, because at the end, the creature just goes up into flames. We don't know what happens with that, but when Haggis is burying the creature later, it has that necklace that his son gave him that he said he'd never take off.
So I thought
he's already transformed into
Pumpkinhead. Yeah, even in death it transformed and he buried Lance.
But I thought the Pumpkinhead creature had just been burned like to ash and that soul is free, and then he shriveled up into the Pumpkinhead after that.
Mm-hmm. And you have to sort of you don't have to address what would have happened if Pumpkinhead had been able to complete its task, right?
Yeah.
But you can kind of infer as to what would happen from the story is that.
Yeah. No, I'd like to see it take it just a wee bit further, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, just punch it just a little bit more, because we can do that now, right?
Yeah. But yeah, I like the idea of freeing the previous soul.
Yeah.
Right? Even if the body dies, the soul's free to go on to heaven or hell.
The main story isn't really about Pumpkinhead killing these kids. It's this moral conflict within Ed.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see more of his grief and more of his anger, and then how that affects him initially when he's experiencing the kills. And we do see that it's tormenting him, but is it guilt that drives him to help those kids, or is it because he just doesn't want to see it?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't get a very clear understanding of which one it was.
And that's where we need some more development there.
Like, I mean, you could have the whole bit too where, I mean, the one girl that survives to the end, can't remember her name.
Well, because we don't care.
We don't care. You would have it that, like, she legitimately didn't want this to happen. She could have tried to help, but part of the theme of this movie is that vengeance is unstoppable, but it also is without reason. So it's killing everything else, all of these kids, regardless of whether they were involved or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you could have it where he's like, he kind of, I don't know, comes to an awareness that it couldn't have been all of them cooperating or something. I don't know.
Well, he never saw it, so he's blaming them
all
as a
of
group.
Them, yeah,
as a group, yeah. And even though the younger brother stayed and waited with his son in the hopes that help would come, at least one of them took responsibility. And the irony is he's the first one to die.
Yeah,
right. And I appreciated that irony actually.
Because it was the first face he could put to his son's death.
Yeah.
Well, I sort of
there's something that makes sense about the order.
Yeah.
Because I took it as something deeper, whereas it's the brother of the guy who actually killed the kid, and part of the torture and torment is for the worst person to watch everybody he loves die first.
True.
Yeah.
You know, you're onto something there, and I do like that aspect. What if one of our cryptozoological researchers also has a link to this town?
Ooh.
What if it's his wife's sister or something? Or niece or
brother.
Some relation that he's only vaguely aware of.
That makes it way more challenging. It
gives him at least some sort of moral connection where there might be a reason for him to, more than one reason, because he doesn't want to see this person particularly
but
die.
Then his grief also really damages the whole concept of him moving forward with raising Pumpkinhead in the first place.
Yeah.
You could have it. Sorry, I came across, I don't know if this will work, but it's a thought I had when we're talking about, like, he moved away and he did other things. Perhaps he went to university. Perhaps he got a PhD. Perhaps he got a PhD in myths and legends and folklore. So doing this whole PhD where he's like, he's now a teacher in myths and legends and folklore, he truly believes Pumpkinhead to just be a myth or a legend and nothing else. He doesn't believe it's real. So it could be like, somebody might know him from a while ago, like at the university.
And this might have been one of an old student.
An old student.
That's now gotten a few years
older. Or somebody who's read one of his books, one of his papers on myths and legends about Pumpkinhead. That, I can see, that could work really well.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, that could totally work.
It would be a connection that would really kind of make sense.
It's not as personal. I like that. I do like that.
But they might know his wife, too.
There's a connection there. You can start filling in some of the gaps in his history. There, but it's not as a familiar connection. And you know,
then you get this really great bit of hero worship happening.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That makes Ed really uncomfortable.
Yeah,
right. Which just sort of adds to his disgust with these people and hatred of these people when it all comes to a head.
Yeah,
right?
When the accidental death of his son.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the one thing that I also want to address is Ed's culpability in his son's death.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, he left this kid alone with strangers running around on motorbikes to go get something from his house for a customer.
But this is very, this is very 1988. Yeah. You could do that.
He could have done that later, though. Like, it's not like it needed to happen that instant.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, I just didn't play for me watching it now. It has to be changed. I mean, I'm not necessarily against the idea of him being somehow culpable in his own son's death through negligence.
Well, we've kind of covered that because he's kind of drawn these people to his town.
Yes.
Mm. I don't think he needs to leave. I mean, that was a pretty weak thing to begin with.
Yes.
He could just be busy with customers when his son's outside. Like, it could still happen in the moment.
Because that's what was happening prior. He was inside.
Yeah.
Serving customers in the store, and his son was outside playing with his dog.
That didn't change anything. If you would have cut that all out, it wouldn't have changed a damn thing. If he would have just come out afterwards and the kids ran into the shop, the results would have been the same.
Yeah, or took off on their bikes. Like, and that's the thing. If you want the two that are missing who take off because they don't want to get caught, they just take off on the bikes.
Yeah.
That fixes that.
I would change that because that was one of the few things that did bug me about this movie was, one, his culpability in it. And the other was the fact that they unloaded their bikes right at the shop there, and there's like this dirt bike track right there, like, or this really great dirt bike terrain. I would change that because, one, we're changing what their role is.
Yeah.
Is I'd say I'd have like the two brothers and their girlfriends coming to town on ATVs to get supplies from, right? And they're goofing around. And they are literally just goofing around, and there's an accident. Right?
Yeah, and those things are really heavy. I think we were on similar page there, where, you know, maybe they're out on the outskirts on camping research or whatever. In a way, that's what the kids were doing in the movie. They were just stopping in as the last place they could get food or whatever before heading up to their cabin. Yeah. So it's kind of similar.
I actually have a great way for the accident to happen. It just popped into my head while we were talking here. Okay, I don't know if either of you have ever driven like one of those four-wheel ATVs.
A lot, and I've also crashed a number of times.
Yes, and they're so easy to tip backwards.
Yep.
Right? So say they're being like fun. None of these guys, kids, people are bad people, right? So they're having fun. They get his kid up onto the ATV. Say, hey, let's go for a ride. And they tip it up. And he gets crushed by the ATV when it tips up.
That also makes the kids a wee bit more sympathetic because they're being nice to this kid.
Yeah, and it was truly an accident.
Yeah,
right? He might. The whole thing is he might be excited. He's like, I've never seen these things before.
Yeah. Most of these kids were just like, he's kind of watching them, and his dog runs out to where they're racing
and chasing the motorcycles.
Chasing the motorcycles.
As a dog would do.
Most of them are ignoring him.
And how I would run after my dog as a child.
For the most part. Kind to the kid.
Yeah.
Like, they're not harassing him or anything else. There's Joel is a bit of a dick to him, but
yeah,
look at the bottle caps. I'm like, ooh, look, he made a Four Eyes joke. What a dumbass.
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
That, yeah.
I mean, it's just so juvenile.
It's yeah. And it's, again, that was one of those 80s movie things. Like, yeah. Oh, good, a kid with glasses. We better make fun of him.
Yeah.
But that kid was adorable, damn it.
Doesn't fly anymore.
No, I think the idea of them sort of picking up with the kid and sort of being interacting with him in a positive way turns into a tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes it a lot more tragic too.
Oh, for sure.
Right. And I'm all for making it tragic.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause I mean, even what the one I watched, like, I'm like, I love this kid. Like, I know I didn't have much time with him. And like you say, they need more time with the father and the son, but like just watching this kid do anything, I'm like, this kid's magic.
And I mean, this is one of those things we've talked about in the past where killing a kid in a movie, it's so rare and it drives the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't have Pet Sematary without that either, but it's you want to make it really hard to watch. You want that scene to be really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, I mean, he's losing a child.
And that'll help if you like Ed and you like some of those researchers that we've made them into.
Yeah.
Or those kids.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you think about it, when you think about the really great horror films of the 80s, is most of the characters that these kids that get killed in these slasher flicks and so on, none of them are unlikable. Some of them might have the odd unlikable quirk, but for most of them, you like them, which makes their deaths much more traumatizing.
And that's just it. Yeah. If you like them and then they die, you're more emotionally invested in what happens to them, and you're going to feel for them. And you want, especially with these pretty much all these characters, you need to have some sort of emotional tie. And you don't to most of these kids.
And this is sort of twisted around, too, because I sort of remember a lot of the 80s horror movies where it was the most obnoxious one would die first. And then as you liked them more, they got killed later.
Yes. Yeah. it's true.
They,
but
they could have mixed and matched and I still wouldn't have cared.
Oh, hell no.
But I do like the idea of maybe Pumpkinhead toying with the key guy.
Yeah.
You know, and really making him experience all his friends dying and the way he toys with them.
He kind of does, because we've got Joel and Tracy? No, Joel and Grace.
Tracy?
The final two.
Oh, Tracy's Chris. The final girl.
And
Joel is the guy who ran over the poor kid.
Yeah.
Is Chris the one?
Oh, Chris.
Yeah, because Chris is the nerdy, nice guy.
Yeah, Chris and Tracy were the final two. But Chris and Tracy are still outsiders. Like, they didn't fit into that group to begin with. Right, so they kind of did do exactly what Trish said. They took his brother, and then took his brother's girlfriend. Then he took his girlfriend.
Oh yeah,
right. So they did do that. I don't know if it was intentional, but it worked that way. So we definitely want to play that up a little bit more as well.
Oh sure, and the other two don't get taken, I think, because he doesn't care enough about them.
Yeah. Now, we need to talk about Bunt here, because
Bunt's
a critical character.
He's a critical character, but like I said, he was so far down the cast list, and I'm like, why? Because he facilitates everything. He teases his little brother with the poem at the shop, and that's when one of the girls is like, stop it. She gets freaked out by the poem.
Yeah.
And it also triggers some memories for Ed as he hears it inside. It's why he's zoned off. He's remembering what he saw as a kid. So it's very important. Later on, when Ed's trying to find out where to find the witch,
Bunt's the one who takes him.
Well, Bunt's the one who takes him, but after his parents turn him down. Bunt's the one who takes him, and, well, I know where she is. I don't think he still believes in the legend, but he even says that chick freaks me out.
Yeah, she's scary.
Scary.
Like, it's one of those ones, she's so creepy and weird. And he's like, I don't know if I believe in magic, but I'm still scared of her.
Yeah. Right.
And then later when they realize this creature's out and everybody's locked their doors, he sneaks out because he's like, oh, Jesus, this is a real thing. I'm going to get those kids killed. Like, I took Ed to do this.
Yeah.
So he's going to try to help.
Those few who are left,
I mean, he's a little bit of a jerk early in the film, but in that teasy brother way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's not malicious.
Well, I mean, the other kid stole the ball, so he was just making sure that he knew he was in trouble. Like, I don't know, he just wanted to... And bigger brothers will do that to little brothers. They just do.
Yeah. So, you know, he takes responsibility for for his part in what's happening.
He has an arc.
Yeah, he does.
Nobody else does.
He's the only one that thinks to take some of the survivors to the church. I mean, it's a burnt out church.
But it's a good try.
It's a good try. It at least causes Pumpkinhead some moment of pause.
Yes.
But this also...
It didn't do anything in the long run, but it was a good try.
But in that movie, and this is something that I think
they treat him like a demon, so...
True. And he is demonic. They do say it was a demon of vengeance.
Yeah.
So this also ties into the whole bit where it's like the outside clans and the inside clans, because he does talk about, like, well, they tried to start a church out here. It didn't really take.
Yeah.
So you could kind of keep that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. I actually liked that bit of dialogue, actually. It kind of made me chuckle a little bit, which was well needed at this point in the movie.
There was another line. Most of the kids were kind of alive at this point. Some of them left with guns. And the girl grabs a knife. And she says, just in case God isn't listening.
Yeah.
Love that.
Great line.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also love when the guy opens the door and she's just got the cleaver ready to go. It's like, ah, it's you.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, poor Button, and he gets in the way, and that creature goes at him a few times because of it.
Yeah.
But he survives because Ed figures it out.
Hero. Ultimately, he's the hero of the story.
Yeah.
You're totally right. You are totally right.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ed, you know, stops the creature through self-sacrifice, but he realizes also what's happening to him as well. I mean, it's not just the guilt of killing these kids. He realizes, yeah, he was grief-stricken, but he didn't really want this. He didn't want their deaths on his head.
Yeah, he's still the protagonist, but he's not the hero.
No. Yeah. No, I mean, he's the one who finally stops Pumpkinhead, but part of it, I think, he realizes is what he's becoming as well. He's becoming this creature, and he'll be doing this again.
And he also notices, like, at that point where he kind of really truly gets to the sacrificial part is when it's going after Bunt, and he knows Bunt didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's part of the thing. That's why everybody locks the doors. You don't want to get involved with the creature. You don't want to, if you're trying to keep the creature from doing what he's doing, then you're now on the menu.
Yeah, well, you're in the way. You're keeping it from doing its job, so you get disposed of as quickly and efficiently because you're in my way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of disposal, one thing that I don't know if I would or not, but because I was watching it, I'm going, would I make this more graphic, gorier in terms of the way that Pumpkinhead disposes of these victims? Because, I mean, it's a monster.
Yeah.
Right. It is. But is it about efficiency and just right? Or is it, or
I think he could have killed them all within 5 minutes. So I mean, he's
the torture is the time, right?
Yeah, he's torturous. Like when he pushes that girl's face and slides it across the window before pushing it through.
So good.
And it's like, it's not a shove through. Like let's wind up. He just it's
just brute force.
Brute force, and it's like nothing. He's like, I could have just ripped her head off.
Yeah.
But it's all about
that's one thing I would not
causing
change.
Fear.
Yeah.
Well, he wants them to hear her beg and plead.
Yeah. But I found most of the deaths, and I mean, because it's a horror film, one thing I felt tension and I felt stimulated, like mentally stimulated by the whole story. But at no point did I feel horror.
Yeah.
Right, and that's.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How do you accomplish that without going into the gory realm?
There are some movies, and I'm not going to name them because I think we're going to be talking about some of them in this cycle of movies. But there are some movies or earlier than this that handle horror in such a great way without actually showing it. Yeah. Like it's that movement of you see what he's going to do next, and then you see the result of that.
Yeah, and
so you could see the creature pulling on her head per se. And then next thing you know, it's rolling on the ground.
Yeah.
But you never see it come off.
Yeah.
And your mind's going to make that horrific. And
that's what I meant. Yeah. I didn't mean like the
gore.
Like showing.
And God knows I'm a proponent for gore. But in this film, I want
to create tension.
I think tension's more important.
Like you can have them looking for one of their friends and they come across this gooey pile. That's the friend.
Exactly. Yeah. That kind of thing. Because the deaths themselves were tragic. I mean, one girl gets dropped from that tree.
I like that one, actually.
Getting impaled with the shotgun. I love how he picks it up, looks it up, and looks at it.
You think he's going to actually fire it for a second?
Yeah, because he's a fairly intelligent creature, Pumpkinhead, and you do think he's going to fire it, and then he just uses it like a spear. Yeah. It's like,
and it's the earlier death. That was cool, and there were moments there where that's where I wanted it to go. Right, yeah. I mean, not graphic, but definitely more horrific.
Yeah,
right, and I wanted to see more of that earlier.
Yeah.
Right. So that, but not like you said, not, it doesn't have to be Wizard of Gore, blood flying everywhere, entrails, all that kind of stuff. But certainly that suggestion, right, where you see the moment before and then a scene shortly after that shows the aftermath, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that be a head rolling across the floor or your pile of goo, right? Something along those lines, just to make him just seem that much more terrifying. Not only is he torturing you by making you wait, but also by allowing you to see the damage he can do.
Ooh, and you could have also, just to ratchet up that tension, because the other thing about it too is I love that where you don't actually see what's happening, but it always freaks me out in a movie where somebody's missing and they know the creature's got them, but you hear nothing but screams, like blood-curdling screams, and then they come across the aftermath, and you're like, oh, they took their time, because you know how much time they were spending screaming.
Yeah, exactly.
Before they even stop. Right.
Yeah.
And then when the screaming stops, that's when you're like, oh, wait a minute. Now we can go looking.
Yeah. But you come across and you're like going, that was a long time screaming. Oh, that must have been painful.
You could easily make this a horror comedy if you wanted.
Yeah, and I don't totally want could. To, but no. You could easily. I like the idea of almost there's that where you have Pumpkinhead catch somebody and torture them. To a point, then let them go.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Just to amp up that tension a little bit more. It's like, I'm coming for you.
Yeah.
Right?
There's no stopping me. I'm not done with my fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not, and just to create that fear in them. Right?
Yeah.
And I think it'd be great to do that with the younger brother.
Yeah, and I think
right?
that feeds him. Yeah. It feeds the power and link between him and Ed.
Yeah.
And feeds that transformation. Yeah.
Because I think you need to give Ed more time to realize what's happening too.
Yeah.
Right, because the first three, four
it's
kills are like bang, 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 bang. They're very quick.
Yeah.
Right? So if you sort of prolong that tension, right? Yeah. I mean, it does take place over the course of one night.
Yeah. And we can see how that. You could just think how that would affect somebody's psyche. As you know, like, oh, he's not dispatching them quickly either. Like, I didn't want this. I didn't want them to suffer.
Yes.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So and that would all feed into Ed's angst and make it more about his conscience rather than guilt.
Yeah. Oh, and you can have it too where it's sort of the transformation isn't just the physical exterior. Is like he's sort of at some point he realizes that he's getting a little bit of pleasure from this and he's like, oh no. Like, and he just realizes that, and that's sort of the tipping point.
There'd be a great scene when that last kill where Pumpkinhead takes out Chris, where he kind of chuckles and that wry grin, and you can actually have Ed do the same thing.
Yes.
Right? That this kind of creepy laugh, and then you see him going, well, wait a minute, that's not supposed to happen, right?
Yeah, he's like, that's not me.
Yeah, you can create some really great icky feelings.
Yay,
icky feelings in a horror movie.
Well, it's such a cool idea. Like, it's a horror movie, but it just has such an incredible theme where vengeance hurts you just as much.
And that's the thing is, and I mean, when I was reading some of the trivia about this, and a lot of reviewers, when they re-released it in 2000, came back saying this is one of the great horror monster films, one of the great monster films, because it has pathos and it has tells a story, and it's not about the monster. The monster is a device.
Yeah.
Right. And that's one of the things they keep mentioning is that it's not. It is great because of the story, not because of the monster or the acting. It's because of the story. And that's the one that you want to keep throughout this a remake is that story, because that's what makes it a great movie.
Yes.
Right? You can just make it more visually interesting and engaging through adding elements and expanding upon some other elements of the movie.
And we can also talk about the other thing too, where it's, you have, because we have an expanded town, and it's been like some of this can happen within town, and you have those people who don't believe in it trying to help somebody, and they're just collateral damage. Like, this town could be completely harmed by this as well. Like, they'll get up the next morning and be like, holy crap.
Yeah, I do like that idea. Is like you could have like longtime residents like slamming their doors and shutting their doors and turning off their lights and all that stuff, and you can have some of the new folks coming to take advantage of the tourist business, wandering around the streets, going, "What's going on?" Right?
Yeah.
It's like why'd the bar close?
Yeah.
Right. What's happening?
Oh, the kids are running along the road. They pick them up to take them into town, and the person who did that dies.
Yeah.
Because they just thought they were helping somebody out.
Imagine that final moment when Haggis is burying the new Pumpkinhead corpse, and then it fades out to like some Pumpkinhead plushy doll laying in the street.
Oh,
because we made it a tourist town.
That would be a.
I love it.
I like that. I like that a lot.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to
commentary on commercialism as well.
We'd add a second layer of commentary on it. I like that. Yeah, and I don't think we need that much more like ancillary deaths, but certainly one.
If you've got a bigger town, you could totally have this creature kind of run amok for a moment, and say there's a fucking backyard party, and these guys are marked, go there for help because they're hearing the noise of this party, and these kids don't think of anything of it, and we can see some real carnage there.
And I mean, it doesn't have to be like death, but certainly like
kids getting tossed around,
and Pumpkinhead crashing right through their bonfire in the back, like just flames flying everywhere, just a great visual too, right?
And this would also be a part of what Ed is going through. Ed's experiencing all of this, so Ed knows that these are people that are in town that he's met, that he knows, and that he said like he's killed. Mm-hmm. Because of his vengeance,
or heard hospitalized or permanently disabled, but I think that Pumpkinhead doesn't necessarily kill things, gets his way, but he gets them out of his way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. I mean, I don't think he kills arbitrarily, but if you're in his way, he'll push you out of his way. If you're stubborn, he will kill you. If you're firing a gun at him or whatever, but if you're just in his way, I can see him sort of crashing through like the literal bull in a china shop, where mm-hmm. he just sort of crashes through everything and people get hurt. People do get killed, get maimed, but it's not.
Yeah,
there's no intent there.
It's
no,
not the whole party, because those people have gone, and that's his target. Yeah. These people are just around.
He's a creature driven by vengeance. These guys just he has no attachment to them. They're not marked. Yeah, so it should be just like wiping them.
But they're in the way.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. They're obstacles.
Yeah,
they're
until they're a threat to him.
Which I can see, some idiot being like, get out of my head. Like, just some poor kid doesn't know what he's getting in for.
With a baseball bat kind of thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could all, that the pathos of that death would be great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just some young kid.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And Ed sees that, and now he's done exactly what these people did to him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's killed somebody's son.
Yeah, and that's perfect. I actually like that a lot, because it just tied it all together. It's like, and that's where his true moment is, right?
Yeah.
Is not just what he's seeing.
Yeah. And you can you could maybe have that, so like you said, the bonfire, cackle. And he gets burned, and the burn appears on Ed's arm.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, it all culminates in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes, guys. It's so good.
Yeah, as we said, the meat and potatoes of this movie really works.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They just some of the more important aspects of this movie don't get enough time.
They need to be fleshed out. The character, like you said, the characters, you need to care about the victims to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You need to care more about Ed, because I'm sorry, like I said, they just didn't give me enough to grab onto for Ed. Like you said, his grief.
I don't think we get enough time with Ed to really feel for what he's going through.
Exactly. Yeah. And you don't know enough about Ed to really care about him, because he comes across, like right from the very beginning, he's a grumpy, sourpuss farmer guy, right? When you first see him, he's just scowling and burning weeds, right?
Yeah.
And then,
the only time you see him smile is when he's interacting with his son, and the son gives him that necklace he made for his dad.
Yeah.
And it's a really happy moment for him.
Yes, and that works really well to a certain extent. But it makes it harder to care about Ed when he's never happy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, even though they've taken away his one thing that gives him joy, you still don't feel a lot of empathy for him.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to at least feel like he gives a shit about these people in the town, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, once he's got a shop in town, we can show that fairly easily with, you know, when he's going to work with his son. He's like, yeah, we're just on our way. Mm-hmm. He's saying hello to people.
Yeah. You know, it should be a tight-knit community.
Yeah.
We should see, like, friendliness, not just antagonistic all the time.
Yeah, and that's, and I mean, that's a sort of a Lance Henriksen kind of trademark, is sort of the gruff, surly guy, right?
Yeah. I mean, I do like the fact that, I mean, somebody like Lance is pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
Even now, in his senior years, and there's just a presence about him, and I think that's important in the casting as well, but it's got to show the softer side of Lance, too.
Yeah, and I loved watching it. Like you say, like those moments interacting with his son, I'm like, oh, I like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I can see him being kind of commanding. I would want him to be kind of commanding and maybe a little surly when he's annoyed, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a divided town about, especially in our movie, about what he's doing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if he's made a bit of a tourist trap for this town, I could see how some of the townies are not going to be happy about that.
Yeah.
And some are, and some will benefit from that.
Well, and I want some sort of, rather than him being kind of surly, I want sort of this somber,
have a presence, though.
This somber bit of sense of grief about him because he's still mourning his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that's what they were trying to convey in the original movie, is he's not grumpy, he's still kind of not handling the death of his wife very well, but because they didn't tell you what happened, it's hard to feel anything to get that sense of it. But I think that's why he's supposed to be kind of surly, and his son is his only source of joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I think they were trying to depict a grief-stricken man, and they didn't quite do what needed to be done to show.
No, I get the feeling that wound up on a cutting room somewhere.
And it
got shot at all.
Yeah, because you need some backstory to give some sense of that, right?
Yeah.
And I think we've done that. We can kind of do that through meeting the cryptozoologists who are kind of hero worshipping him, and they can kind of tell his story.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Because they knew him in better days.
Yeah. Or they've read about him
before he
came back to town to start his new life with his son, now that his wife is gone. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they would have been students and now they're professionals as well.
So you don't need to do it as backstory or flashback. Yeah. You can do it as dialogue and interaction with the other characters.
Yeah, it does. You don't have to spend a heck of a lot of time on it. But
yeah, you can have the kids be like, yeah, no, I mean, there was a couple of times I met his wife. She was amazing. Yeah. Mm. Like they sort of feel a little grief themselves.
Yeah, there'd be photos or something around his house.
And yeah, exactly. And gives some sense that she was even present. Right? Yeah, and which was missing entirely from the room.
They get a small moment where he's burying his son, and that's it. Yeah. And it should have been more than that.
I don't know. I think that on the whole, though, just by fleshing it out, we're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of those movies where the skeletal structure of the film works, and I wouldn't take that away. I would just modernize that, and we really need to get into the emotional aspects of those characters. Now, it's time to figure out who those characters shall be. I'll start off.
Okay, yes, please.
Because I don't have a lot, because I didn't like the whole, I mean, at this point, the trope, the 80s trope of the kids going to the cabin in the woods, I'm done. It's so 80s, it stays there.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it there, and I think we've solved that problem now. But at the time, we didn't know what that was going to look like, so I just didn't bother.
I mean, pick up
anybody off CW, right?
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, I mean, up-and-coming young actors, and that's kind of the way I went anyhow myself. But yeah, I cast them even knowing full well they weren't going to be the same characters.
Yeah, I kind of ignored them, but I stuck with the core of this. So I really got three people cast here. For my Ed Harley, the lead of this film, I went with Michael Shannon because I wanted somebody with that kind of presence.
Amazing.
Yeah. Zod. Kneel before Zod.
And he's played those tortured fathers before, so he's got it.
Yeah, I think he's got that same quality Lance has got. He's got something in his gravitas and his presence to him, so he could play evil, and I would love to see that transformation with him as well. So I think he'd be good for that. I went with Dane DeHaan for Bunt.
Oh, nice.
He might be a little old for Bunt, but boy, that kid just doesn't age.
That's true.
He's in his 30s and he looks like he's 14.
I know.
So
what has he done? Maybe he is evil.
I don't know. Sold his soul. But so I went with him for Bunt because I think we still need that kind of link character. I don't know if he'll be still be called Bunt because it's a dumb name, but you know, that linking character that kind of links the modern part of that our town, the kids who don't quite believe in the myth, to the old families of the area. And for Haggis, I went with Lorna Raver, and she was played the witch in Drag Me to Hell.
I didn't cast Haggis. I did.
I don't know why I didn't.
Yeah, and for my director, I really like the idea of a special effects guy doing the directing, and this guy has well-versed resume in special effects, and he's definitely directed some episodes of Walking Dead as well. Hello, Greg Nicotero.
Nice.
Okay. Yep.
Yes.
Very good.
Probably one of the heir apparents to the universe of Stan Winston, and I think he's would do this a lot of justice.
Nice.
Yeah. So, Trish. Cool.
Okay. So, you know what? I like your idea. Like, we're just going to use cryptozoologist. So, and kind of like I told you,
As I said, random CW kid.
Yeah. I wrote down people I liked, and I've done that, but now I've just scratched out their names. They can be anybody. So.
Tell me, you just give me a few names that you did use.
I'm going to give you all the names of the people I cast in there. They're just going to be called different names because they're a new group of people. So, but I mean, my Ed Hardy, I'm not good. Now that you've said Michael Shannon, I'm not really that comfortable with it. But I'll start off with my Haggis. And because she's done sort of this role before, and I just want to see her do it well, is Julianne Moore. I think we could just age her in with makeup. She'd be a great... She's done Evil Witch, but I want to see her do a really good Evil Witch.
Okay. Yeah.
I can buy with that.
Yeah, and for Bunt, I went with Tom Taylor, because I did tell you, I went to see The Dark Tower, and he's the kid in it, and he was amazing. Like, he's just really good. I just could see him playing this role. Like cool. I say, The Dark Tower is... The actors in it are not the problem with that movie.
Yeah, I didn't cast the kid because everybody knows how hard that is for us.
But no, that's Bunt. Oh, I couldn't do the kid. And for the kid, I just thought any random 6 to 7 year old little boy or girl, because I don't think he's lost a child. It doesn't have to be a boy or a girl.
Yeah, that's true.
Like it's very interchangeable. This is the light of his life. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's a boy or a girl.
So, and then I went with for my cryptozoologist. Now that we're doing that, I've got Zoe Kravitz. Abby Jacobson and Alana Glazer from Broad City. Mm-hmm. I love those guys. And Arturo Castro, who's also in Broad City. Lucas Till, like we can trim some of these. Daniel Kaluuya, who's from Get Out. I liked him. Mm-hmm. And then Caleb Landry Jones, if you just want somebody who's an asshole. Because he does that so well in movies, and I like it when he does it.
Right. I have those actors too in mine. But
Good. Yeah, no, that's a good list of characters.
Yeah.
And I, surprisingly enough, also cast Zoe Kravitz.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So who was your Ed?
I went with this just because I think he's growing into these roles, and I like to see him because I didn't know what we were doing with it. I could see him being a very distraught dad, which was actually Jeremy Renner.
Okay.
I've seen him go that way, and I kind of like the
idea. I love the idea of him being in a horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunter was kind
of... Sort of.
But it's pretty graphic.
But I could see him being like, I don't know, I think I'd like to see him in a dad role, and I think he can capture that agony of losing a child.
Yeah, no, he's a hell of an actor, so that's a pretty good choice as well. Yeah. Who's your director?
I didn't have one for this one, because I didn't know what we were going to do.
Oh, yeah, no worries there. I mean, sometimes we don't know until we do it, so that's why I didn't have my kids, because I didn't even know if we were still going to have them.
Oh, I had tons of kids, and I'm like, I know, I wanted the two, Abby Jacobson and Alana Glazer. I wanted them in this. They're funny, but I'd love to see them.
Lots of, like, 20-something.
So my turn?
Yeah.
My turn. Okay. I'll start with my Ed Harley. I really like this guy. He doesn't get enough credit. I went with Dean Winters. You guys will know him as Mayhem from the insurance commercials.
I don't watch.
You have to watch Mayhem commercials, Jay.
Okay, I have to watch those commercials then.
But
name sounds familiar.
Yeah, as soon as you see him, you'll know who I'm talking about. If you've ever watched the TV series Oz, it was the one set in the prison, he was in that. He was excellent in that. He's done some of this Law & Order TV series, was in that for a while. Really great actor, kind of has that stern look to him.
Okay.
Right? So, but young enough to play a professor, but still be a young father.
Okay.
Oh, I know who he is now.
What do you think now?
Yeah, I get it. Okay. Have you ever seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
No. You guys are all talking about shows I've never watched.
Damn it, because he's the Vulture in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
There we go, yes.
Nice.
Now I know.
Okay, so I cast Mr. Wallace because I thought he was a pretty crucial character because he interacts with Ed quite a bit. And because I wanted to cast him, I put in Sid Haig.
Nice.
I just love the idea of him playing a backwoods farmer guy.
Yeah.
He's old enough to be a grandfather type. So I thought, let's go Sid Haig.
I'm on board.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, excellent. I'm going to go to Bunt. I went with Finn Wolfhand. You might remember him from Stranger Things.
Okay.
He's the one who hosts all the D&D games.
Right.
Right. He's a little younger.
The one that disappeared.
No, the one that hosts the games. Not.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I like him because he's got that unique look.
I looked into that cast as well.
Yeah. They're a little young, but by the time this gets made, he'll be old enough to play the Bunt character.
Oh, sure. There we go.
Right. That's why I was thinking ahead. Okay, so for my cryptozoologists, our victim cast.
Nice. I love how you put that.
The victims.
I'll just go through them just like Trish did because, they won't have the same names and they won't necessarily be the same archetypes either because we're getting rid of them as best we can. So I've Jussie Smollett. He's in Empire, the TV series. He plays one of the sons. Excellent actor. He's also in Alien Covenant.
Okay.
Zoe Kravitz, as I mentioned. Miles Teller, because I love guys who can play an asshole really well.
We have to have one asshole.
Yeah, and he plays a very sympathetic asshole most of the times, which is really nice. For my Steve, I did Nick Robinson. He was in Jurassic World.
Okay.
Most people won't know him from this, but he was a regular on a show called Melissa and Joey, which I unfortunately did have to watch many episodes of, and he was my favorite part of it. So
yeah, I think he was the only good thing on there.
Yeah, he was by far.
He was such a bad joke.
But I also cast a young woman named Anya Taylor-Joy, who was in Split and The Witch.
Oh, nice.
And, again, really liked her.
I saw The Witch. I haven't seen Split.
But. Yeah, excellent movie.
You gotta see that.
And then I also cast Suki Waterhouse, who was...
Yeah.
Yes. Like a really great, well-rounded the bad young batch. Cast. Now, for my directors...
Directors.
Yes, they're a directing writing team. They're in a movie that I watched last year for 30 Days of Horror called The Circle.
Okay.
They also did have a TV series coming up called Dark/Web. And they also had a previous web series very similar themed to The Circle, surprisingly enough, or not surprisingly. But I went with them because, I mean, even though they kind of focus on technological thriller horror stuff, it's all very character driven. And I knew that that's kind of where I wanted to go with the remake. So it worked out really well that we did go that way.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I have they're a really strong young director, directing and writing team that I think would bring a lot to the characters.
Yeah.
Right? And I'd like to see what they would do with the monster horror.
Because they've already been in it, but they went in, like they did those new horrors where it's the concept. And that's what this is. Part of the horror is the whole concept.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming into a time now with some really great indie horror and different
visions. Who the directors were. I told you what they did.
Yeah. Who are they exactly?
I went with one of them is Aaron Hahn, and the other was Mario Musone.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
It's one of those names that we're going to butcher one way or the other.
I'm glad it was you and not me.
Yes, it was my turn.
For a change.
But I know I recommended it last year, but I highly recommend watching The Circle. Considering it's a single set.
I had listened back our 31 Days of Horror just recently, and still sounds boring, but
I curated my list, so I put it on
Neat idea. Oh, there'll be some crossover. There never inevitably always is. There's one I plan to watch, and I'm like, oh, damn it, Sam talked about it last year. That's okay. I'm still going to watch it.
I'm still going to do a couple of these.
But I don't want to cover things, too many things that we've covered before.
Oh, no.
But I don't feel like you guys have to do that. But, I mean, it's all about watching films we've never seen before, and we would like you guys to join us in that. We're doing 31 Days of Horror right now. It's just the first week of October. We're just a couple days in. And feel free to join in. It's an average of 31 horror movies you've never seen before, but you don't have to follow our rules. You can just watch 31 horror movies if you want and make it your best, the ones that you want. But share it with us.
Yes.
Share with us. Follow along with us. We'll be tweeting out what we're watching while we're watching them. And then we're going to make a special of it, which will drop in November. But we'd like to know what you're watching if you're taking up the 31 Days of Horror Challenge as well. And you can let us know. Follow us on Twitter and let us know there. Tweet it out. send us a message, tag us in your post, or go all the horror hashtag. I haven't talked about that. That was our hashtag last year, all the horror.
All the horror.
And we will be using it again this year. I'm getting giddy about it. I can't wait to start using it again.
Yeah. For we're recording this, even though this drops first week of October, it's still September for us here in recording land. So I was trying to kayfabe that we were in October, but we're not. So thanks for blowing that, Sam.
Well, it's, yeah.
The mystery of production has just gone out the window.
They should already know.
They know that.
That's true.
Plus, if we're asking them now, like, I mean, they'll give us the clues by the time we get here. We may have already seen what they said.
Yeah, who knows? But yeah, let us know. And like I said, you can do that at Invasion Remake on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can also do it on our Facebook page, like our page, and tell us what you're watching there. It's Invasion of the Remake on Facebook. Or you can even send us an email about what your favorite horror movies are, or what your thoughts are on some of the ones we're covering this month. Uh-huh. And you can do that at invasionoftheremake@gmail.com.
Yes. Yeah, and that's like the email one. You can give us like a much longer email about all the movies that we probably should see. Like sometimes it's just easier.
Yeah, I've already had a few suggestions thrown my way. They were all weird, like ghost Disney things. I'm like, I don't know. But some of these might be good to remake.
Wait, Halloween Town?
No, it was like Blackbeard's Ghost.
Oh yeah.
That was like, I'd seen it when I was a kid. And that's why I'm like, when he sent me this list, I'm like, great, except my rules, I can't have seen it before. And I barely remember it because I was a kid, but I can't do it because I've seen it. So I won't be covering that for 31 Days of Horror. Maybe one of you guys will, but I won't.
I won't be either because I've seen it yet. But
yeah.
That's the absurd thing.
But I would like to see that on the remake list because I haven't seen that in ages and now I want to.
Yeah, me too. That was probably my favorite of the suggestions, but he had a lot of stuff along those lines that were kind of PG ghost stories. And I'm like, I might pull from this down the road. Nice. It was a good list.
It's that weird thing. Like, we've seen so much horror. So sometimes I was running into a bit of problem where like, oh, I totally want to watch this, but I have seen it. But that's how I know I like it. But I have seen it.
Yeah, I'm not. I've already been doing some research. I mean, by the time you guys hear this, doing some research. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm not gonna have a problem this year. There are so many things. I'm like, oh, I want to watch that. Oh, I can't yet. Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to watch that. Can't yet.
Yep, I'm kind of in that mode. I've got a stack of pre-picked Blu-rays sitting here, and more tagged on Netflix and Amazon Prime. So I'm ready to go. If anything, I'll be like, only 31.
Well, there's two I know that are going, like, there's two in theaters that I'm going to go do a theater run on.
Yeah, I only got to a couple last year, but yeah, I would like to at least get to one or two in the theater this year as well.
And they've already posted that, remember that Halloween marathon at the Globe? They're doing that again this year.
Right.
I've seen a lot of it, but I'm like, ooh, there's one I really want to see, but there's some I do not want to.
Right.
And that is always the risk with horror is for every good horror film out there, there's probably 9 or 10 bad ones.
Oh, yeah.
It's unfortunate, but true.
Yeah.
Although, again, we'll talk about last year. I think I had one stinker out of 31 movies.
I had a little bit more than that. Well, I definitely had more than that, but I had more good than bad. And that says a lot because I've done this challenge many times. You guys have only done it once each, but I've had some like, oof, if I was batting 50%, I thought I was doing pretty good.
There's a winning percentage on this, and it's usually winning.
Well, and I think that says a lot to the quality of how horror is changing again.
That's true. Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, I mean, when I say stinker, I mean it's like barely watchable stinker versus watchable but not great, and then there's great, right? So, because I had lots of that were sort of in that middle ground. It's like, it was good, I'd never watch it again, and then there were some that were like, yeah, I will watch this again some point down the road, right? And then there's some that's like, oh, I can't believe I just waited an hour and 30 minutes of my life.
Yeah.
Yep. Season of the Witch, Halloween Season of the Witch.
That's what's on the marathon. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I did that last year.
That one's. I told you that one was bad.
Well, you can't put it on your marathon if you've seen it.
No, that's the Halloween marathon at the Globe.
Oh, it's at the Globe.
They put it on there, so I was like, oh, I might just go to bed at that point. Just leave and go home.
Good time for a nap.
Yeah, go out for a beer or two, come back, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, like I know what you mean, Sam, about how you can find ones that they aren't bad. Like there's some that are so like conceptually I love what they were doing, But, you know, they're limited by budget. It's like very indie. Mm-hmm. Some of the actors, like, this may be their first job, but you're still like, oh, God, bless them, they're trying.
Yeah. I have one thing that I am going to try to achieve this year. I am going to try not to see any found footage horror.
If I get the opportunity, I do want to see the sequel to The Houses October Built.
That would be my exception if it's available.
Yeah, if it's available.
Is that out
yet? I usually like to sneak one. No, not yet. Obviously, it's going to open in October, and it's still September for us. And And given the nature of theatrical releases anymore, at best it might be art house or direct-to-video or streaming. So I'm going to have to keep a close eye on it so I don't miss it. But I might have to like see if it's on demand or something like that.
Well, remember we were talking about the Bad Batch.
If not, I'll talk about it next year. Yeah. It doesn't have to be this year.
Yeah, but yeah, that would be my exception to that rule because I'm done with
I really like that one. But I don't know. I saw this trailer for the sequel and I'm a lot less excited about it because it just feels like we're doing the same thing.
But
that said, there'll be a couple I know I'm going to watch that are on my list that I'm expecting to stink.
Nice.
But I will probably be watching Rings.
Nice.
During this, because we talked about it during our Ring episode and other episodes as the thing kept getting more and more delayed, and I'm like, well, I just want to watch to find out why this is so bad and why the studio wound up pulling production on other horror movies. That's including the second Friday the 13th remake was pulled because of the poor box office on Rings.
Wow.
So I'm just fascinated about the mess.
It must have been a royal mess.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like, it's fun knowing some of these movies when you're watching them, knowing the backstory of them makes them real entertaining.
Yeah.
Because you know what was happening.
Yeah,
or you have the horrors that are the blue cheese of horrors. They stink, but in a very delicious way.
Yeah. Well, I definitely won't spoil any of the other movies I'm going to be watching.
Yeah. But nice.
We'll be talking about that in November because we got to get through October to do it. And so it'll drop around November time. It'll be about 6 weeks of, I think, horror we'll be doing over October and spill into November, the early weeks of November. And
We should do horror like the first week or two of November.
Yeah.
Just to taper everybody off. Still keep us in the theme for 31 Days of Horror one episode. Yeah.
This is the methadone.
Yeah.
Yes, because then we'll only have about a couple of weeks before heading into Christmas. But we might take a bit of a season break for Christmas as well. We'll get back to you guys on that one as we discuss it heading into Christmas, because it's been like 2.5 years now of doing this without a break, and I wouldn't mind taking a couple weeks off.
Oh, hell yeah.
So we're not going away, but we might take a couple weeks off at Christmas time, and we'll see. We'll take our first season break.
Yes.
We'll enjoy Christmas. We're going to be watching movies just for fun. I don't know what that's going to be like.
Yeah, either that or we'll pre-record a couple. But.
Or at least a couple. We always do the Christmas special.
We'll do a placeholder special.
A few minutes just so you guys have something. But I don't know. We're figuring out. We'll have some content for you during December for sure. But we might keep it light.
We could do part one and part two placeholder specials if you want.
I don't know. We'll talk about it off air.
That would be fun.
Yeah, we'll talk about that off air. Another way you guys can help out the show outside of, you know, getting involved and talking about what you're going to do for the horror challenge is you can also tell your friends about the show. Mm-hmm. You already know how to find it, but tell other people how to find it as well. If they're not listening to the same or have the same apps that you do, we're on a ton of different apps, including Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Blueberry, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Libsyn. And even frickin' YouTube.
Frickin' YouTube.
Thanks, guys. I love that.
You're welcome.
So, and if you didn't hear any of the ones you like on the list, trust me, we're probably on the other ones too. We're on more than I'm even aware of.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I found some magical ones where I'm like, wait, are we on here? Apparently.
A lot of them use the same aggregates, right?
I think so,
if they're using the iTunes feed or whatever, then we're in it. sheet of the places. So you have to be actively avoiding us not to find us.
So in the theme of the Halloween month, you can't hide from us.
That's right. And if you got the time, please drop a 5-star rating. I'll take 4. And a short review over on iTunes. It helps other people figure out if it's a show for them. And helps get more
earballs
on the show.
Yep. Please,
thank you. That'd be good. Awesome.
Yeah, don't be selfish. Yeah, sure.
That's right. We are a small independent podcast. We don't have big financial backers. We are paying for this out of pocket. We have no advertisers, and we're giving this content free to you every single week. So just do us that solid and help other people find the show.
Exactly. We are ad-free. Do you know how rare that is?
It is super rare.
That's amazing.
And I won't promise we'll stay that way, but
for now.
For now. I mean, it's been a couple of years, and I kind of like it this way.
Yeah.
It won't be changing right now, but, you know, we've seen some nice audience growth this year, and we thank all of you out there.
Both old fans and new.
The guys that stuck us through some of those really rocky ones in the beginning to where we are now.
Yeah.
Which are still rocky from time to time, but much better. Day.
Thanks for your patience.
You know, life's a journey, and so is podcasting.
And if you're working your way so backwards, you'll know it when you see it.
Hear it.
Yeah, hear it. There's some not so good ones, but
it's okay, but it's very satisfying to know where we came from.
That's right. Our rocky beginnings. We're really nervous and not knowing that the hell we're doing. So.
And ambitious. Don't forget ambitious, that first episode. Oh, way too ambitious for a first episode.
Yeah, for not having figured out what the hell we were doing.
We didn't know.
We had no idea. We knew not what we were doing.
Right. We thought we can totally do this. We're idiots sometimes.
Sometimes. We still do it.
That's why I said sometimes. It still happens.
It still happens.
It's like that time you got way too drunk and ended up throwing up. And you're just like, I'm never going to do that again. It happens again. You just forget.
Yeah, well.
No, I haven't done that in a long, long time. I have no plans. I don't expect to do so again for the rest of my natural born life.
But. One would hope.
Exactly. I don't know. You could get old and decide, screw it.
You know, I could, but I doubt it.
All right. Well, that's it for Pumpkinhead. Next week, we will be back with another comparison.
Wow.
And we got some pretty cool stuff coming up. So join us next week.
Yay.
And until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
I'm looking for an old woman. She lives somewhere in the mountains hereabouts. Some folks say is how she's got powers.
I never heard no such woman.
The script came into my house, and it said Pumpkinhead on it. And I thought, what is this, Ichabod Crane? You know, I mean, a guy with a pumpkin on his head. And I thought, oh, man. And it took me a couple of hours before I would open it. But my agent had said, you've got to read this. And so I read it. And there was one scene in it. I mean, I liked it. But there was one scene in it about, you know, like a halfway through or a third of the way through it, where my son is already dead, and he's on the seat in the truck beside me, and he sits up and he says, what are you doing, Dad? Why are you doing this? And it really scared the hell out of me. I mean, while I was reading it alone at night, you know, the hair on my neck stood up, and I thought, that scene, only that scene was what made me want to do the movie. And then as we got into it, Stan brought these really wonderful ideas. I'd already done Near Dark, and I had bought a shotgun down in a little town called Coolidge, Arizona, and it was this long pump shotgun from World War I. And I said, Stan, I want to use that shotgun in the movie, and I started gathering. I go through a period where I gather everything from what I'm wearing to what I'm using in the movie, and I even got the hat I wanted. It was a baseball cap from Chinois or something down in Santa Monica, but I got rid of the name, but it had the right color.
Like I got a whole bunch of silver dollars and stuff that I bought. I looked around at pawn shops and I bought a lot of silver dollars. And I figured that he had a small nest egg, enough to carry in both hands. And when I was buying the witch, I kept gave her everything I had. And those silver dollars fell through the cracks on the set and landed in the mud down below the building, you know, of the witch's house. And I never went to find them. They're still there in case anybody wants them.